Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'll be guiding you about the battle space of the War of Ideas with four extraordinary combatants in it. Ariel Cohen from the Heritage Foundation will be visiting with us about what is going on in Russia at the moment and what the implications might be for all of us. We'll be talking with a former SEAL Team 6 member, Howard Wasdin, about the Bin Laden raid and about the extraordinary men and women who fight this country's wars and whether we're doing what we must for them. Major General James Adkins, the Adjutant General of the Maryland National Guard, will be joining us in segment three, talking about his own forces and more generally about the condition of our military and specifically the Guard. Fascinating conversation with him. And finally, segment four, we'll be visiting with Jim Hansen, our duty boots on the ground guy. We'll get his take on the budget deal and much, much more. So all of that straight ahead. But first up, Dr. Ariel Cohen, Senior Research Fellow for Russian and Eurasian Studies at the highly esteemed Heritage Foundation, joins us to talk, among other things, about Vladimir Putin and what he's up to these days. Ariel, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
It's a pleasure being with you, Frank.
You have spent a lot of time tracking and in at least a few occasions talking to Vladimir Putin. He is currently the Prime Minister of Russia, of course, but there seems to be a fairly strong likelihood he will run for president again. Ariel, as you look at what's going on inside Russian politics these days, is it fair to say that Putin is becoming even more aggressively hostile to the United States as he positions himself for this electoral contest?
Yeah, the New Year's resolutions of Mr. Putin were no more Mr. Nice Guy, and one of his pet subjects, his hobby horses, is bashing America. And America is there to be bashed. We perceived as weak around the world and in Russia. Our budget was in a near-death experience, our debt, rather, was in a near-death experience. We're pulling out of Afghanistan, Iraq. We cannot figure out what are we doing in Libya. And, hey, we're here to be kicked. Uncle Sam is here to be kicked, and Putin is kicking it. One, he called us parasites on the body of global economy. This is a country, just like China, which keeps lots and lots of its savings in American treasuries. Maybe Putin was afraid that we will default, and he is really going to lose his money. Secondly, it is increasingly evident that the Russian military intelligence, the fabled GRU, sent folks to blow up a bomb next to the U.S. Embassy in Tbilisi, Georgia, in September of last year. Right. That's a highly unusual and aggressive act. And finally, Putin's rhetoric now is quite imperialistic, I'd say. He is talking about welcoming Belarus, the independent country of Belarus, is located between Russia and Poland, back in the fold of Mother Russia, and annexing South Ossetia, a territory occupied by Russia in 2008 from the neighbor Georgia.
Right. Interesting and rather troubling bill of particulars, Ariel Cohen. One thing that you've just mentioned that I'd like to just visit with you about is, I think you talked about Putin's money, not just Russia's money, being at least to some extent safe harbored in the United States or in its debt instruments. There are reports that I have seen, and I'm sure you follow this much more closely than I, so I'd like to get your take on this, that Putin has become an exceptionally wealthy man during his time at the leading roles of Russia. Can you shed any light on whether he is in fact a billionaire many times over? And if so, to what extent that some of that money at least has been garnered through connections to the Russian mafia?
First of all, the reports of Putin's personal wealth surfaced as early as 2007, 2008, a well-known Russian political analyst, Stanislav Bielkovsky, published a couple of articles, including in Germany, where the subject is, of course, of greatest interest because of Russian gas supply to the country, saying that at that time Putin's wealth was estimated between $30 and $40 billion dollars. That's billion with a B.
My God.
There is a recent scandal in Russia. There is a defector who claims that Putin ordered $1 billion to be spent on building a palace complex near the Black Sea. That figure may be a little bit exaggerated, but there are pictures of this really fancy palace on the Black Sea north of Sochi that was kept to hold by the presidential administration during the tenure of Mr. Putin. So technically, I guess it's a presidential palace being built. But it's on the books, it looks like. In any event, as the U.S. government is engaged head-on in what the Obama administration calls the reset policy, they do not talk in polite company about personal worth of Vladimir Putin. But I've seen the Patek Philippe on his wrist, and I'm sure the man is not poor, not at all. The Patek Philippe is, you know, people are writing about the watches of Russian leadership. And there's a mind-boggling six-figure sums of money just there. Putin always known of giving out watches off his wrist, but there's a cheaper watches. There's like $5,000 to $10,000 watches that keeps out his presence.
For this kind of purpose. We're speaking with Ariel Cohen. He is a senior research fellow for Russian and Eurasian Studies at the Heritage Foundation, where he works in the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies. Ariel Cohen, you have written extensively about Eurasia, including in your book, Eurasia in the Balance. What is the latest when we impose some sanctions on some of Putin's cronies recently, for a variety of rather hostile activities they were engaged in? As I recall, one of the things that was intimated, at least by some in Moscow, was that that could have deleterious repercussions for us in terms of supporting our forces in Afghanistan, something we are increasingly relying on Russian routes to do. What are you hearing on that score, Ariel, and what are we to do in terms of diversifying our sources of supply? I think we wound up going to a Russian route because of problems with the Pakistanis. What's your sense about the play of the moment in Eurasia?
What bothered me tremendously is that we have a piece of legislation in Congress called the Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act. For our listeners who don't track that, Sergei Magnitsky was a Russian lawyer who was a whistleblower. He blew a whistle on a $230 million corruption and fraud plot in Russia, in which Russian treasury was defrauded in coughing up that amount of money, which is quite a lot by any standards, $230 million.
Yeah.
And Magnitsky was arrested for his whistleblowing, put in jail, and died in jail, apparently tortured, denied medical care, possibly severely beaten. President Medvedev of Russia called the death of Magnitsky a crime. He said crimes were committed in his death, but nothing happened in Russia. People who were involved in Magnitsky's demise were promoted and even got medals for their service to the motherland. Now, the senators want a list of about 60-plus people involved in the Magnitsky affair, as well as people involved in blatant violations of human rights, torture, and property crimes, such as in the case of Mikhail Khodorkovsky, a former Russian oil businessman, head of Yukos company, who is in jail now with after a second trial that they conducted. These trials are considered being kangaroo courts. In any event, the Russians got very, very mad about the Magnitsky bill. They sent the foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, here, who was here in July, talked about it, warned that the repercussions are going to be negative. And then there were leaks from Russian sources saying that Russia is threatening to break cooperation over the supply route to Afghanistan, sanctions against North Korea, sanctions against Iran, cooperation on Libya. So across the board, Russia is threatening to break the toys and go home if we go after their corrupt individuals in the government. And I think this is relevant to our earlier conversation about Mr. Putin, Russian wealth, how they keep their wealth. They're not keeping it in rubles, and I think it's not accidental.
Yeah, yeah. Ariel, I'm afraid we are out of time, and I'm going to have to come back to you for a further expansion on the point of what we should be doing about this kind of obvious failure of the reset. Ariel Cohen, we value your expertise in this area tremendously, and we'll look forward to talking with you again soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with a man who knows a lot about the special forces of the United States, Howard Wasdin, about the Seam Teal 6 strike that took out bin Laden.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the cravings for sweets. I totally lost the cravings for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true. Now, I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Howard Wasdin. He is a former Navy SEAL and the co-author of a best-selling new book, SEAL Team 6, Memoirs of an Elite Navy SEAL Sniper. Obviously, one of the things that we are anxious to talk with you about, Howard, is your impressions, your insights into a story that's now beginning to get a bit more flesh on the bones, namely the actual takedown of Osama bin Laden by some of your former colleagues. What can you tell us about that without compromising sources and methods or anything sensitive about the operations of your outstanding elite unit?
Well, actually, Frank, there's nothing really kind of anticlimactic as far as what I can tell you as far as the logistics of the takedown. I think that's been pretty well documented even by the National Security Advisor. But I will tell you this, and this is something that's come to light recently. The question is out there, or the debate, or the premonition that these guys went in with thought on their mind, and that was to kill bin Laden. You know, no capturing, no taking alive or whatever. So I will comment on that and tell you this. And the Tier 1 forces, the counter-terrorism forces, which SEAL Team 6 and Delta Force make up, there's a judgmental use of deadly force protocol, Frank. That means you come in and deadly force is used only if someone is not being compliant were doing what they're told in that room. I was in Mogadishu, Somalia, doing the dreaded Black Hawk Down assault, and I could have personally shot two of the guys we were there to capture on three different occasions. We were not there to assassinate. That's not what America does, regardless of what the conspiracy theory thinks. The judgmental use of deadly force is employed by the SEAL Team 6 members, and anything short of Osama bin Laden being totally compliant and being still in that room, in my mind, would have warranted his death. Keep in mind this. He could have done something as innocuous as knocking over a teddy bear and, you know, had the potential to detonate the whole compound due to the IEDs or whatever. So I will say the only real inside information I could give you as far as the op itself is that that judgmental use of deadly force protocol is adhered to in all situations. So by virtue of Osama bin Laden being dead now, tells me he was not totally compliant in that room.
Yeah. And I know there's a new article out in the New Yorker that provides something of a blow-by-blow in terms of how the teams deployed and moved up through the house or structure that he was in. Was there anything, if you've seen that report, is there anything that strikes you as other than, you know, the sort of by-the-book training of a highly skilled and extraordinarily proficient team in terms of this takedown, either the way in which they took out some of the so-called civilians who were there, or otherwise, that you were surprised by, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah. Well, let me just go ahead and say this about the article. Don't want to upset any of the New Yorker fans, but I read the article yesterday. It's totally disingenuous. It starts up talking about Red Squadron at SEAL Team 6. There is no Red Squadron at SEAL Team 6. This probably came from some type of staff officer who's running around getting coffee for everybody. Definitely not an operator. There's too many things in this article that I look at and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me, including the position of the blowout kit they talk about. But there is no Red Squadron at SEAL Team 6. Now, Delta Force is broke down into squadrons, but there's about 20 points that an operator would look at in this and go, okay, this is a sensational read. I'm sure it's going to be entertaining, but anybody with a tactical brain looks at this and goes, okay, this is more media hype. And after reading it, that's my take on it. And, you know, it's just sales papers, I guess.
Right. Do you have any concern? We're speaking again with Howard Wasdin. He is the co-author of SEAL Team 6, Memoirs of an Elite Navy SEAL Sniper. Do you have any concern that whoever it is, staff officers or members of the unit or national security, deputy national security, I guess, advisor John Brennan, running their mouths in ways that are going to make it more difficult for your colleagues to perform the kinds of extraordinarily difficult missions that this raid on bin Laden's compound was sort of emblematic of?
And that's the best question I ever get, Frank. Let me be clear on this. That is exactly why no operator from this unit would ever talk to anybody at the New Yorker or anywhere else while they're still in the unit. Wait till you're an old guy like me, 16 years retired from the team, then talk about whatever you did. Does not, will not, cannot happen with the guys who are still there. To finish answering that question about how we do business in the future, yes. I, in my book, was very careful not to put any tactics, techniques, and put everything in my book that was already declassified and just told a story, a human interest story. What the Deputy National Security Advisor did, not only did he go on television and show the way the assault went down, even worse, he showed the way it was supposed to have gone down, which is exactly the way I would have planned it. So basically, we'd have to take that play out of our playbook forever, throw it away, because now the whole world knows this is the type of insurrection we do, taking down a multi-storied, compound. So yeah, that kind of took me by surprise, and kind of, you know, I think it's just, I don't know if he was just trying to make the administration look good or whatever, but it definitely gave away a play in our playbook. And getting back to the article, again, that's exactly why team guys don't talk to the newspapers like that when they're active.
Yeah. I think there's no question, Howard, that John Brennan was, as usual, trying to make the administration look good and did not seem to have a whole lot of concern about who was going to be paying the piper for his doing so. Let me ask you this. As you are looking at the arguments that are now Howard Weston, about defense funding, as an operator, do you have any concerns, or former operator now, of course, any concerns that the guys that are currently performing these extraordinary missions, and of course, the larger military of which they are a critically important part, are going to find themselves incapable, not just because of people compromising their techniques, but because they're not going to have the kit that they need, they're not going to have the kind of infrastructure and support that they need, as a result of what may well be really reckless reductions in the overall investment we're making in national security?
Well, I'll tell you what, Frank, I can answer this question from the gut because I'm not running for office and I'm not looking for votes.
That's what I'm looking for.
I'll tell you this. We have become, in my opinion, a nation of entitled people. We don't have to do anything to better our own position. When it all fails, in a wet hour, Uncle Sam's going to bail us out. I don't think the government was set up initially to do that, and here's where I'm going to be real unpopular. All these things that we have that we expect, like I can get pregnant and have a baby as a teenager, and I'll get on a program, and the rest of the country is going to take care of me, that type of, of just reckless and irresponsible mindset that I saw as a police officer when I was in Florida is one example. Another example is no matter what, if you come here, we're going to take care of you and give you medical attention. And you know what? The people who are working or paying the taxes are going to fund that. So if we get to the point where we're actually putting our guys in more danger, and I say if, because we're making those cuts instead of the entitlement cuts, then we're in a downward spiral, if we're not already. And I'll stand by what I just said about moving away from having the government fix everything, because tell me the truth, when is the last time our government ever really fixed something?
Well, they fixed Bin Laden's wagon, but they did it with guys like you and did it at extraordinary personal sacrifice on the part of your former colleagues. And I just want to make sure, and I know you do, Howard Weston, that that sacrifice is not made even more extraordinary, maybe even insupportably so, by reckless decisions in Washington, D.C., taken by people who don't have a clue about what you all have to do and what you're doing for all of us. Thank you so much for the light you're shedding on those sorts of questions, both in these sorts of conversations, Howard Weston, and through your terrific book, co-authored with Stephen Templin, SEAL Team 6, Memoirs of an Elite Navy SEAL Sniper. We look forward to visiting with you future, sir, if you will, and thank you very much for your service to our country. Next up, we have Major General James Adkins talking about what's happening with the Guard in the state of Maryland.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope and life. www.waterforcongo.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined, I am very privileged to say, by Major General James Adkin. He serves as the Adjutant General of Maryland, the man who commands Maryland's Army National Guard and the Air National Guard, the Emergency Management Agency, the Maryland Defense Force, a man who, in short, has got his hands on some of the most important homeland security as well as national security capabilities, certainly in the state of Maryland. In general, it's a treat to have you with us to talk a bit about how your guys are doing in this dangerous world we're in, and specifically how they're faring with the deployments and the demands that have been placed upon them, particularly since 9/11. Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. How are they all doing?
They're doing well, Frank. I have the report. May and June were busy months. I guess all the months are busy here in Maryland, but I was in Bosnia and Estonia in May, and then Iraq and Kuwait in June. And so I got to see the troops on the ground over there. And I tell you, I come to the assignment as the former Secretary of Veterans Affairs for Maryland, where I had the opportunity to work with many generations of American veterans. And I'd like to report that the men and women who currently serve, they stand as tall as any generation that's ever gone before them. You know, our nation asks a lot of those who serve today, and they answer the call. And probably not since World War II has so much been asked of the Guard.
Yeah. Well, and that's really what I wanted to get into with you, General, at least briefly. And we're going to talk about some programs that you've got going on in Maryland to help our returning vets and others working in the Guard. But just on this question, I'm concerned about the extent to which we are asking an awful lot of these folks, and you're absolutely right, they're superb, and they've done brilliantly. But at some point, do we risk breaking this force with the kinds of deployments that we've been asking, particularly people who are doing this kind of part-time, or at least signed up with that expectation?
Well, I tell you, you know, I would have had the same concerns two or three years ago and did have those same concerns, but I have been amazed by the resiliency of the troops. We actually have people asking to be engaged in the deployments and stepping forward. So, you know, if you look at it, we've approaching a decade of conflict now, and many of those who are members of the Guard today joined up after 9/11. So they knew what they were getting into, and the Guard is a completely different force than what it was in the 60s and 70s. You know, we've become an operational force, not just a strategic reserve. So the troops want to be part of the war fight, and the Guard is unique. But not only are we in the war fight, but we stand ready for service here at home.
Yeah, and well, it's very heartening to hear that they're bearing up, General. To what extent are you finding that economic considerations outside of the military are driving retention or even a willingness to serve? Is that a factor at all, or is it really that the guys are just the guys and women, for that matter, are gung-ho about the mission and there to serve?
Well, I think they're, you know, a patriotic group. They see a need to serve. They step forward. As you know, less than 1% of our nation wears the uniform today and serves with tremendous hardship in places all around the world. And you know, I want to recognize their families that are left at home. I think they have the toughest job, the spouses that are back here keeping the families going, taking care of sick children, getting the car fixed, paying the bills. That's why we focus a lot on supporting, you know, not only the service member, but the family as well.
Yeah, and let's turn to that. We're speaking with Major General James Adkin. He's the Adjutant General of Maryland. You've served for over 30 years, I note, in both enlisted and officer ranks. You've seen at every level of command the kinds of challenges that the troops face, and I'm so glad to hear you salute their families who are also serving. General Adkins, tell us about a program that Montgomery County has initiated to try to help the returning vets, and what role this plays in the overall scheme of things in terms of trying to support these heroes, both wounded and non-wounded.
Well, I have to tell you that you know, Maryland was one of the first states, even before the federal government started supporting initiatives such as the Yellow Ribbon, to identify the need to support families here at home. And we actually had a Maryland program before the federal program came in. But the program you're talking about in Montgomery County, you know, as I talked earlier, the nation asks so much of those who wear the uniform, and we could not do what's asked of us without the support, you know, of family, friends, employers, and our community. And the initiative in Montgomery County is making sure that the community is stepping forward to coordinate a lot of the available resources for service members and their families. And the point, there were many Vietnam veterans at the announcement I attended earlier in the week. And just so amazed at how our nation has stepped forward now to support service members compared to what our Vietnam veterans experienced when they came home.
Yeah. No, it's hopefully making up for past neglect and worse, even contempt in some cases. General Adkins, let me ask you, one of the other programs that I know is important, particularly to these folks under your command in the Guard units, who are in many cases disrupting their lives as well as their careers to serve their country overseas or in combat zones or what have you, is employment. And you've got a program within your organization, the National Guard Education and Incentives Office. Tell us how this works, and is there something that people in the population at large could be doing to try to help the work of this incentives program in finding positions, jobs, and gainful employment for these returning vets?
Well, I think that I saw some figures from our command the other day that the office in the Guard that focuses on assisting with employment has assisted 100 members approximately in finding employment. And what we try to do is, even before the troops return from combat, is reach out to the commands and have them go individually through the command and identify people that are concerned or have a need for an employment when they get back and work with them on an individual basis to find a job opportunity. I know in Maryland we worked with the job exchange program to identify jobs with a kind of a little Minuteman next to them that were individuals that the companies that were looking for to employ Guard and Reserve and returning veterans. So I think across the board, if people could step forward and identify that they're interested in supporting returning service members in employment opportunities, that's what I would ask.
And what's the best way for them to go about doing that? Is it to get in touch with your office or with this office of the incentives program?
That's correct. I think contact my office or drop us an email or visit our website. You know, and we can provide that information for you to add to the program. But I think just reach out and contact the Maryland National Guard and say, hey, we want to help. And we'll put them in contact with the right office and identify them as supporting our employment opportunities.
Terrific. General James Adkins, what is the web address that would be best used for that purpose?
I'm working with Colonel Kohler here for the website for. I have our annual report on the back is www.md.ngb.army.mil. Again, that's www.md.ngb.army.mil. And they can also, they can reach out to us on the website and we'll get them in contact with the appropriate office.
Terrific. Well, needless to say, we strongly encourage such opportunities for our vets and salute you, sir, for your service to the country and theirs, and hope that this is a small contribution to ensuring that the folks who are doing so much for us are appreciated and supported as they return to civilian life. Thank you, General. Appreciate you joining us, and come back to us again soon, sir. We'd appreciate an update as to how your guys are doing and more generally how the military is holding up, especially as the budget cuts start coming fast and furious, I fear, here. But thank you, sir. Great to talk with
sure.
you. Next up, we'll be getting
thank
a perspective from the boots on the ground level, as we say, from our colleague Jim Hansen.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The MetaSystem from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The MetaSystem also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the MetaSystem, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the MetaSystem to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The MetaSystem by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by Jim Hansen, as we are each week. I'm happy to say, our duty guy with what I think of as the boots on the ground perspective on these myriad national security challenges and interests of the United States. Jim comes to us via black5.net, the mill bloggers that he is associated with, also bigpeace.com, and the Warrior Legacy Foundation. And Jim, a lot to cover here. Let's start with your take on the latest turn of the screw, if I can use that expression, with respect to the budget likely to be available for the armed forces of the United States as a result of the debt ceiling thrash here in Washington.
You know, I think like everybody else, I don't know what it actually means. The folks that I've talked to inside the Pentagon who work in the budgeting process still believe that a lot of, you know, the first so-called, I guess they call them tranche of cuts, seem to, you know, people have thrown around the number of $350 billion over this period, and that seems to be the harder of the numbers. You know, that seems to be like it's going to have to be legitimate cuts. There's not a lot of accounting gimmicks and trickery, so those look like actual budget cuts. What I've heard is that the language they've seen thus far seems to have a lot of, you know, for the so-called triggers, if they can't come to a deal, which I assume, you know, this is Congress, I doubt they'll come to any decent deal. So this second set of automatic cuts seems to have a lot more ability for them to trickery. So I they're less scared inside some of these places than I've heard, you know, a lot of the coverage of it. So I don't know that anybody's really figured it out yet, but at least the people I've talked to are not freaking out over the possibility of these automatic cuts completely gutting the military. Now, let's caveat that by saying, who knows? You know, I mean, this is the Congress and the budget, so there's a lot to yet be said.
Well, Jim, let me just ask you this. You've actually spent time, of course, in the Special Forces of the United States. You've been involved in combat on behalf of the country. You're a man who's spent enough time in or at least around the Pentagon to see how the operation works, for good and for ill, for that matter. I'm just wondering what you might say in response to the proposition that I don't think there's an employer, a businessman in the country that would run the smallest business, the most inconsequential business in the country, the way we are currently running what I would argue is the most important business, certainly of the federal government, namely keeping us safe and keeping us free. And maybe you're right that this isn't going to turn out to be over $1 trillion in cuts because there's another train wreck coming later this year at the hands of people who may actually think a train wreck is exactly what's needed. But Jim Hansen, let me just ask you, what does somebody in the Pentagon do? Somebody who's responsible, let's say, for providing the kit that your colleagues, your comrades in arms have to have, and a lot more like them, obviously, waging the nation's wars as we speak, to say nothing of what we may get into if people perceive us to be weak and therefore respond aggressively to it. If they don't know now what the implications are going to be, even 6 months from now, let alone a couple of years from now.
Yeah, you know, what I've heard them say is it's real simple. Tell us which mission you don't want us to do, and we'll make the cuts. that's straightforward. It's a disgrace, Frank. I mean, I guess I'm trying to say it doesn't seem like quite the Armageddon that it was being portrayed, but that doesn't mean it's not a disgraceful way to operate. And like you said, I mean, a kid wouldn't operate a neighborhood lemonade stand with the degree of uncertainty we're taking the most important function of our government to be. You know, you can't have any of the other freedoms our country enjoys unless we are safe and secure and unthreatened. Or not unthreatened, but not threatened in any way that covers or destroys our stability. Well, that's what they're doing. In order to do that, you have to, like you said, you have to be able to plan. You have to be able to look forward. And now the Pentagon budget is just a giant cash cow that all these disgraceful congressmen are looking at as a place to take money and shift to other programs they want to support. I don't understand how anyone could be expected to actually provide security when you don't know what the mission is and you don't know how much money you have to complete the mission. So they don't know what they're going to do, and they're jumping and doing backflips to accomplish it as best they can.
Right. Well, Jim Hansen, we'll be watching closely with you, as I'm sure you will, at both black5.net and bigpeace.com, among other places, how this serving up of the missions that the United States military will no longer perform goes down. But I know you vented your spleen at one or the other of those sites, I can't remember which one now, Jim Hansen, about the suggestion by the vice president that we're dealing with terrorists, all right, but they're terrorists in the Tea Party movement and the Republican Party. Tell us what your thoughts were on that comment.
You know, I think it's talk about disgraces. I think the entire messaging meme of the Democrats in this budget process was to make anybody who thinks that spending more than you take in is trying to push grandma off a cliff. You know, and so to go from that, which was bad enough, to actually use words like Hezbollah, use extremists, use terrorists to describe your political opponents is, first of all, a sad, you know, commentary on our political discourse. But even worse, it devalues the actual folks who are fighting terrorism and what they're doing by comparing it to a lame political process. So it was sad on many levels, which I guess when you're dealing with politics is, I guess, the norm. But for Biden to actually have said those things and agreed with the people who were saying them as the number two guy in our executive branch, I cannot wait for the country to get a chance to vote on him and his boss Berrio and hopefully move them on out. We need real leadership in the White House, and neither one of them can provide it.
Well, again, we'll be watching this closely with you, Jim. Let me ask you about another space that we're watching. And again, Jim, my value is, you know, the common sense, I think, that you bring to a lot of these things, and that of the men and women in uniform with whom you served. What do you think the world is making, particularly the part of the world that is still at least more or less aligned with us, as they witness this episode, this disgraceful, I think is the term you were using a moment ago, disgraceful episode of the trial of Hosni Mubarak and his family in Egypt today?
Well, it gives you a little pause, I would guess, if you were someone we're trying to make friends with, as to whether you want to ally yourself with the United States. Sadly, we have a long history of abandoning allies when it's politically expedient. And in this case, it was politically expedient for the Obama administration to, I guess, belatedly, and when they were forced by public opinion, to go ahead and decide to become, you know, go on the side of the demonstrators and the, you know, the liberators of Egypt. As it turns out, as you've covered many times, they're not the nicest guys in the world. They tend to be a bunch of Islamist scumbags. Right. So now we've got those guys and their allies, you know, the harder wing of the military, having show trials and putting us in the position now of showing anybody who, you know, makes the mistake, I guess, of tying your wagon to the U.S. of knowing, well, if the polls go the wrong way, you might end up in a cage on TV. Yeah. That's lovely.
Yeah, it's not likely to ensure that we have friends, and in fact, and almost certainly it's going to have a lot more enemies. Jim Hansen, very quickly, we've got about a minute left. Tell me about your thoughts on the spectacle now of these so-called rebels, or actually the recognized government of Libya, what am I saying, the Transitional National Council turning their guns on each other. It's not clear all of the particulars, but where is that likely to leave us with this unfolding drama in Libya?
Yeah, who could have foreseen that coming, huh? Oh, boy, you know, any tenfold with a common sense rating over one. Frank, there was never a clue about who we were dealing with there. There was never a plan to deal with them. Now all we've done is enable a collection of people with their own self-interests, destabilize a country that, you know, okay, you get stability under a dictator. Well, now we have instability in an oil-producing nation and no clue how it's all going to turn out. Bravo, well done, Barrio.
Yeah, well, Abdul Fattah Yunus, the chief of staff of the army, bought the farm the other day, and I suspect that's not going to be the end of it. We'll be watching this too, folks, closely with you, Jim Hansen, and otherwise here at Secure Freedom Radio. Thanks for joining us, Jim, as always, and thanks to all of you for being part of the show today. I hope you'll do so again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks so much for listening.
Peace Through Strength with Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.